Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Daugherty, founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop, and I'd like to personally invite you to learn more about how you can be involved in this powerful three-day intensive. The next Gateway to Freedom Workshop is coming up September 17th through the 19th. So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit us at gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity. Your hosts for Pure Sex Radio are Jonathan Daugherty and Stephen Cervantes. Jonathan is the director of Be Broken Ministries and founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop for Men. Stephen is the founder of the Hope Counseling Center. Visit us online at puresexradio.com. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Stephen on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. My name is Jonathan. I'm here with Stephen. How are you, Stephen?
I'm well. Thank you, sir.
Well, before we dive into this week's broadcast, I just want to let you know that we are a listener-supported broadcast, and so we're so grateful for those of you who have partnered with us and decided to support this outreach. You know, we can't do what we do here without the generous donations from those of you who believe in what we're doing. And, you know, it's really exciting because we have... Up through about July 31st of this year, we had over 150,000 downloads of our MP3 broadcast, and so it's pretty exciting to see that. And plus, we get a report each month to see how many countries there are with listeners. And as of the July report, we had over 75 countries in which there were listeners around the world listening to this broadcast. So it's just really amazing to see what God is doing and how. This is reaching out to people in all parts of the world to give a message about hope and purity and of course, God's love for us. So if you'd like to come alongside of us and partner with us, just go to our website at puresexradio.com, and right there on the homepage, there is a link that says Make a Donation. You can find out about all the ways in which you can support this ministry. I actually have no idea what we're going to talk about, so Stephen just said, hey, you don't really need an outline for this one. I'm just going to kick it off. So apparently Stephen's got something up his sleeve, so what do you got here?
I have questions to ask.
I do, too.
Then for you to answer, and then for me to answer.
Okay.
So number one, I've got this thought. Do you think that men put all of their wants and their needs and their desires into sexuality?
Yes. Next question.
Sorry, you're not going to get off that easy.
No, actually, I got to think about that one a little bit because I think a lot of women would say about men, oh yeah, absolutely. They're just, you know, they just, everything's about sex. Everything ultimately boils down to sex with men.
Yes, with sex for comfort, mm-hmm. Right? If we're happy, we want to have sex.
We're sad,
we want to have sex. That's right.
Well, I can see how we've used it we kind of use our sexuality as a mood enhancer.
Yes, for a mood enhancement.
But I
emotional struggles.
I don't know if we put it all. Because I'm thinking even in my own life, I think men are more complex than than the culture or media or anything like that would make us out to be.
So that statement is just too simple.
It makes it too broad, because I'm thinking, okay, for example, I mean, we've had this dream of building this house for a while. I don't boil that down into my sexuality about, you know, every dream, every desire, every aspiration isn't always about sexuality, you know?
Yes, and I guess I'm thinking in terms of emotions. Because when you say build a house, well, I got to get a board, I got to have some nails, I got to have a place to build it, better draw it on paper. That's a lot of your logical self. But in terms of emotional self and exploring our emotional selves, as men, learning and developing and being in touch with our emotional sides, using emotional language, we're really good at the logical. Mm-hmm. But it seems oftentimes women are better at the emotional. And so it's almost like sexuality is a way to vent off lots of emotional stuff.
I think there is a majority of guys who, when it comes to stressful emotions, difficult emotions, painful emotions, I think there can be a learned response to say, whenever I have those emotions, I'm going to either escape in my head to something that feels better, which is typically something sexual that I'm going to think about, or I'm going to go engage in some sort of pleasurable activity. And even if that's not always sexual, I think there's a sensual aspect. You know, we want to experience something sensually that's going to be moving us in a more positive emotional direction. But I'm thinking it doesn't always work the other way. If I'm feeling really great emotionally, maybe I want to go water skiing. You know, I may want to just try to enhance that emotion even more, and it's not always sexual. Or I might just be, hey, I feel great, I want to have a glass of tea. You know, it's like, okay, is it always, does that make sense?
I think where I'm going is I think our sexuality is very comforting.
Mm-hmm.
And so we default a lot of times to go get comfort. And I'm making a very broad statement, because just hugs, just being held, have your back scratched, or go to a massage, or whatever, all of that is sensual. And it's sexual, right? But it's not intercourse.
Right.
So you would agree our sexuality is comforting. And then would you agree also men tend to look for comfort through their sexuality more than women?
Yes, I do think that's probably true. I think women a lot of times can find a great deal of comfort through talking things out, you know, through verbalizing
yes.
things, and so they can be with their girlfriends and find a great deal of comfort in just talking, and there may or may not be touching in terms of like holding a hand or putting a hand on her shoulder or something like that. But I think for men, yeah, a lot of times the comfort, they want to feel better. And because we often do associate feeling better with something sensual. Yeah, this is why I think a lot of guys, I mean, a vast majority of guys, when they're talking about like their love language,
yes,
physical touch is huge,
right.
Huge one, yeah.
And so I think it's that comforting aspect of it. So sometimes I think it's confusing to women that why we don't have so many different like flavors.
Mm-hmm.
We just like comfort. It's kind of simple. We just like comfort.
And it's usually kind of a narrow path that we find our comfort.
So this is an odds and ends program. I don't know if you're going to be able to follow us, but because we're going to touch on some different sort of things. But this line was said in a movie recently, and so I don't take no credit for it. And the comment was this: if I pour out myself, and this was a female talking, if I pour all of me into you, my husband, and I'm like a pitcher of water, and I empty every drop of me into you, and then I find out I'm not enough. Does that mean that one of us is going to have to go have an affair? Because I wasn't enough. And you express that to me. Or I poured all of me out and you tell me I'm not enough. So I don't want to feel like I'm not enough. How does that strike you, that thought?
It strikes me as sad and desperate. And I'm not saying that in any sort of...
No, but that's just your first response.
Comical way. I'm saying that's how it grabs me. It grabs me as a woman who's... Well, first of all, I think she's misplacing her... all of her. Because to pour all of yourself into any man is going to... You're going to come up short. You're going to come up disappointed. You're going to, you know...
So there's no 100% females... that are 100% able to 100% satisfy the male.
Well, what I'm saying is if she's looking to pour all of herself into that one man and somehow thinking that that's going to fulfill her or even
him.
Completely fulfill him.
Right, she's going to be so much so. And there's
I think that
fantasy.
Doesn't understand human relationships, you know. It's like
but isn't that what romance is built upon?
Sure.
Oh, you make me feel so good and I love that feeling and of course you're going to always make me feel this way.
Well, that's what romance is all about, is just chasing the feeling. You're just going to continue to chase
so,
that feeling.
So, but what if I really, truly give you all who I am? You're saying, that's never going to be enough.
Well, I don't... what I'm saying is that...
Because we have it human
always,
to human.
Yeah, we're always incomplete.
Yeah, that's right. We're flesh. We're humanity. There's no God aspect to this discussion.
Now, if I'm going into the romance side of it, then I think... A wise man is going to say, you're all I want. That's
yes.
Different from saying...
Or all I need.
That's different from saying, you're everything that I will ever...
Imagine.
Well, no, I'm yes. not saying that, but I'm saying our needs are met spiritually. And I think they can happen spiritually in a relationship with another human being, but I think our deepest needs are always going to be met from above. And I think we need to have connection in which we say, I'm going to commit to you and you're going to commit to me and make that bond there. But I think ultimately it's like we got to recognize we're incomplete people.
Right. We're human.
However
beings.
Much I try to complete you, I'm going to come up short.
Yes. And I think you know? That's exactly right. That's the point is, do we really complete one another? No, God completes us, mm-hmm. and we serve one another, right?
Yeah.
And we share on the journey, and we fellowship together.
And it doesn't mean we don't move toward each other, or that we don't pour into each other.
Right.
But this statement, the way this statement is framed, it comes across to me as very desperate because it's saying she's placing all of her hope into this incomplete,
right.
imperfect man.
Now, if you poured all of yourself into God, right... there would be satisfaction and completeness. And because that's obviously, we are the creation in relationship to the Creator. But he also left a little part in there, said, well, it's not great to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to make another human being. But I'm not sure he said the other human being is your completer and you're going to be 100% to them. They're going to be, no, sorry. So there's some kind of goofy thinking out there in terms of relationships.
Well, and I think you nailed it when you talked about the idea of romance, at least as it's portrayed in culture, as it's portrayed in media. Romance in that sense is always chasing this kind of feeling. I want to be validated by saying that I will be your completer. Validate me by saying I am your completer. You know, it's the whole Jerry Maguire baloney, you know.
No, what are you thinking when you say Jerry Maguire?
You complete me.
Oh, his line.
You had me at hello, blah, 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 you know. Sorry.
I'm with you now.
I've lost all the female listeners right now. Great. They're like turning
the
station
off. We love that.
Off.
You had me at hello. So here's another, this is the Odds and Ends radio show, Bits and Pieces Week, okay? I was at a presentation once, and the speaker said this, and I thought it was really interesting. If I have a problem, and I'm telling you about my problem, and you fix it, that disempowers me. That empowers you. But I have a problem to begin with. And when you come in here... and you fix it, it makes you strong and right and good. but I have lost power in this relationship because you're the strong one, I'm the weak. I came with the problem, you tell me what to do. Now, actually, I'm going to go away and live with me, and you're going to go live with you, and the truth is I'm going to still have the problem, and I'm going to hide it from you, and next time we see each other, you're going to say, did you do what I told you to do? And I'll go, I tried, it didn't work, but we have to be very careful about getting in and trying to make people what we want them to be. God is growing them. God has them on a journey. I think we have to have a very collaborative mindset of working and exploring and learning this journey together, as opposed to, well, I'm going to be strong, and every time there's something, I'm going to have a solution. Every time there's a problem, I have a solution, or I'll tell you what to do. And there's something disrespectful and disempowering and not right about that.
Well, and the way that I see this work out a lot, especially in marriages, is that it often happens where the husband's just wanting to fix everything about whatever problem the wife is bringing to him. And I think what it, you know, the thing that pops into my head is in one of Peter's epistles where he says to live with your wife in an understanding way. And to live in an understanding way is to, number one, recognize, okay, I don't have all the answers. So that's the first, you know, premise that I have to come from, is that even if I have an answer for this particular problem, I have to have the humility that says I don't have the full answer. I don't have all the answers to every question. I actually sent out a tweet recently where I said, how can anyone claim to have all the answers when no one has all the questions? So if we start with the idea that, oh, every single time you come to me with a question or with a problem, I'm going to fix it. I've got an answer. Well, one of the reasons that I think that disconnects us in relationship is it real easy to move toward a prideful person? Do you really want to go seek help from a person that's always prideful?
Well, that's good.
I mean, you don't. Eventually, you're just going to alienate yourself from these people because they're going to say, every time I bring you a problem that I'm not necessarily looking for a solution, but just wanting you to understand, you're trying to fix it and you're trying to change me. Eventually, you're going to be friendless. You're going to be spouseless. Even your kids won't come to you anymore.
Address this in terms of addiction, like sexual addiction. You go to someone and you talk and you know they have a sexual struggle and you know somebody has a solution.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it's the same sort of thing. It's saying, and I think there's a difference between trying to maybe provide some guidance to a person and trying to solve their problem. I mean, there's a distinction there, I think. I think somebody can come to me, let's say they come to me and they've got, you know, certainly we have plenty of people coming to me with a sexual addiction. I feel like it's my responsibility with my history to try to guide them. But you know how I found the most effective way to guide someone? Questions. Questions.
Yes.
You don't guide someone with statements. You guide them with questions, and sure,
by
maybe
exploring,
they may
right?
Be, and some of them may actually be leading questions because, hey, I've been down this road. Mm. But it's condescending to just make statements to a person and say, do this, do that, do this. You're a child. I'm a man, you know, and I'm going to tell you what to do, you little kid that doesn't know where you're going. I mean, we're adults. We don't talk to each other. We shouldn't talk to each other like that. And I think it's more... it's more in line with how a relationship should be to ask questions and say, first of all, I do want to actually understand your problem better because I don't want to just make assumptions that you've told me sort of the surface issues that I know everything that's going on. So you also have to ask some exploratory questions to say, I want to understand a little bit more. And then if you've got some guidance that you can give, try to guide through asking questions. And as you learn some of their problems, saying, oh, okay, you've mentioned that you've really got to struggle with internet pornography. Have you ever considered maybe like a filter? Have you thought about that? Have you explored those options? I'm guiding,
right?
But I'm leaving it in their hands to make a decision about what they want to do regarding their
That's
problem.
That's great. And asking questions kind of drops somebody's defenses so they can entertain what you're saying as opposed to sounding like you're judging me. Well, don't you have a filter?
Right, yeah.
You know,
what are you thinking? You don't have a filter?
So my next question would be the statement that some men seem to have, or this strategy, just don't talk about it. Whatever the problem is, don't talk about it. We did a show recently on vets, and I reminded of how often, like in World War II, the fathers came home and they never talked about their experiences. And part of their healing strategy was don't talk about it. And once they started talking, even if it was, you know, 20, 30, 40 years later, they would just get all emotional, because it was like, seal off that part of yourself, deny that part of yourself, just don't talk about it. And I wanted to challenge that as a strategy, because I think some men out there listening think that's a pretty good strategy to deal with difficult things.
Well, and I may have a little bit different take on this, because, you know, some people would say, well, if you don't talk about it, you know, whatever areas of your life that you wall off like that, that's areas of your soul that you're basically, that's going to die. That's just parts of yourself that you've cut off, and you're dead in those areas. I actually think it's a little bit different. I think whatever areas you wall off, you keep alive. You keep alive the dysfunction of that area, the trauma of that area. You keep alive the raw emotion of that area. And that can, over years, be very unhealthy, because, you know, especially, you mentioned veterans. Wow, to keep alive the memories of those traumatic experiences, to keep alive the heavy sadness and fear and all those. I mean, I would think the healthy thing would be to grieve and move through that in such a way that part of you is, yeah, there's a scar there, but it's healed. It's like I think if you wall those areas off, you're keeping that sore open and festering for years and however long you've walled it off. And I think also,
and it could be old trauma as a kid. Sure. It could have been terrible things that happened that you endured. It could be war. It could, whatever difficulty. We all have difficulty, and somehow we've thought if we don't expose the light to those places, if we don't grieve, if we don't talk, if we don't journal, somehow that's stronger. But the opposite is true.
And don't you think some people think too, I wouldn't know who to talk to? And that's a legitimate concern, because people feel like, or maybe they've tried to talk to someone and just got slammed. It just worked out horribly. They got betrayed. They were hurt even worse. And so I do think there is a component there where if you've been betrayed, if you had a trust betrayed when you tried to talk about it, I can see where you'd feel justified in saying, hey, listen, I'm not going to open that up anymore because I got slammed last time I tried to do that. So safe people are important. I think it's important that you have safe people. But I still believe you've got to talk about those areas with safe people. And some of those things that you need to talk about, you might even need to talk about with somebody who has expertise in helping someone in those areas, a counselor.
But there's power and healing in opening it up and talking about it, right?
Absolutely.
So if you're out there and you think, I'll just not talk about it, and somehow that'll make it healed, cleared up, make it go away, make it better, just don't talk about it. Oftentimes, that's not a great strategy.
Well, we got time for maybe one more random thought that Stephen's got over there.
Here it is. I've been scratching notes on paper. Sometimes I think, let me see if I can try and say this a couple of ways till I have it the way I want it. Sometimes I think men's voice is found in their sexuality. Or sometimes our sexuality becomes our voice. So we're speaking. And so I would like to ask you a personal story, and then professionally also, how would you say during that phase of your life when you struggled, how was your voice, how was sexuality your voice?
Huh, that's not putting me on the spot or anything. Well, I think, you know, I almost see it more like a, you know, we're sitting here on this radio studio, and I'm looking right now at the mic that I'm speaking into, and there's this filter that's in between my mouth and the mic, and that helps to prevent, like, pops and sounds like that when I say P sounds or T sounds or things like that. And I'm almost thinking that's how I sort of saw my sexuality is that everything was filtered through that type of thinking, through sexualized thinking. And so sort of my voice was sexualized in the sense of how I related with people, how I made decisions, how I, you know, spent money or whatever. It seemed like everything had to pass through that filter. And so in that sense, the way my voice has changed is the filter has changed. I don't have a...
Okay, but let's capture this. You had sexualized thoughts and sexualized actions and a sexualized voice. Because even if you didn't say it publicly, your head was talking to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that your sexuality was acting out some repetitive process. But you were trying to voice something. And so go on now.
Well, I just think... And so in that sense, I think what was happening is everything was... I see my sexuality in those years as being the steering mechanism for everything, for thoughts, behaviors, for action, I mean, all of that. And so I think what's happened in my recovery is I've realized, well, actually the steering mechanism, if I can use that term, is really to be the Holy Spirit in my life. That's the filter, the God's Word, that's the filter. So that's the voice that my life needs to be. So my thoughts, my behaviors, my relationships, the filter, so to speak, that everything must pass through in my life is God's Word. And so therefore my voice needs to be one of encouragement and one of truth and one of love and one of peace. And so it's like the voice changes because I'm
And the Holy Spirit speaking through you, right? I mean, your voice, when you're in sync with God, you're submitting and walking with Him, And you're following His teachings, then your voice is a mouthpiece of God, right?
Right. That's the way it's supposed to work. but it doesn't always work.
But as young men, our voice became about oftentimes our sexuality, our sexual thoughts, our sexual energy. We were voicing out our view of life, thinking from a very sexual perspective.
Well, and I almost think of it this way. It's like in those sexually addicted years, it was as if sexuality was driving my life forward. Sexuality was pushing me forward.
Therefore, your voice was also sounding and your behavior.
And also the voice was very impatient and hasty and foolish. Whereas now I feel like my life is being led by the Holy Spirit. And so there's a walk. The pace has slowed. The decisions aren't as quick. There's wisdom.
More quiet, right? More learning and being a student and saying, is this consistent with?
Yeah. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed this random broadcast with lots of deep thoughts from Stephen Cervantes. But
thanks for being with us and being patient with us as we, too, go on the journey with you.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoyed this broadcast, too, and I hope it will really stir some thoughts in your mind and in your own recovery and journey. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got a story to tell us or if you'd just like to get a little more encouragement, please contact us. We're going to give you that information in a moment. We're glad you've been with us, and we'll see you back here again next week on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
You've been listening to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Learn more about our show at puresexradio.com. Thanks for tuning in to today's broadcast. We want to hear from you. This broadcast is not possible without the prayers and financial support of listeners like you. Our mailing address is coming up. Get your pens ready. You can also contact us by phone at 1-800-49-PURITY. That's 1-800-49-PURITY. Our mailing address for your notes and donations is Pure Sex Radio, 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 401, San Antonio, Texas, 78217. Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.